morning and welcome to the Voices of Legacy on WGTE Public Media. Today, we are honored to have a very special guest, none other than, well, Mr. Wade. Now, how do you pronounce that last name again, sir?
Slowly, but it's how about this? I say Capsicavage. The reality is there's probably a butcher or a shepherd over in Poland who's pronouncing it totally differently and correctly, and I'm saying it wrong, but I say Capsicavage.
I think that's the way to go. Mr. Wade Capsicavage, the 58th mayor of Toledo, Ohio, Wade has been a front runner on the revitalization of our fair city, the glass city, as it were. I think many people remember Toledo Alive back when I was a kid. Actually, I'm a little bit older than you. I was surprised to see that he was elected back in 2017. Under his leadership, Toledo has made tremendous strides in economic development, improving public safety, expanding our educational base and opportunities for youth. His passion for public service is evident through his long-standing commitment to the community. Now I'm building you up, Wade. You got to do good today. Having previously served as Lucas County Treasurer and a member of the Toledo Council, Mayor Capsicavage is dedicated to creating a regional water system, hiring diverse police officers, and improving Toledo's infrastructure, which I think is one of the greatest benefits that we have as a community, being a property developer, previously myself. He's also a devoted husband and father. And today, we're here to find out more about Mr. Wade, our honorable mayor. Good morning, Mr. Mayor. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. Thankful that you decided to come within your busy schedule.
I always make time for forums like this. I enjoy talking about Toledo. You know, I think there's some good things happening in this town. Now, goodness knows we're not perfect.
Yes.
But I think we take two steps forward for every step back, and it's an exciting time to be in Toledo and be a part of our momentum.
Absolutely. So you admit there are some challenges, but nevertheless, I think as a community, if we come together and unite, we will be able to overcome those challenges and move forward and hopefully embrace the very thing that I mentioned as we were doing some research on you, the infrastructure that we have here. I think that's one of the greatest benefits of Toledo and Lucas County. It's not the what most people talk about publicly in the negative or pejorative as far as the dilapidation and all of the empty and vacant lots up under the ground. There's plenty of infrastructure that could spur, should spur, and I think in the future will, more growth in the city. You've been serving in Toledo for several years now. What do you think about pretty much what I just said?
Well, I agree, and I guess I would say there's a lot of different ways to look at infrastructure. Mm-hmm. In the most literal terms, sure, we have, the infrastructure of a, industrial city, mm-hmm. a city that does things and makes things. We have, access to a deep water port,
yes.
The longest north-south road in the United States of America, I-75, right, which goes from Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan to Miami, Florida, and the longest east-west road, mm-hmm. I-90, which goes from Seattle to Boston. I mean, I'm no geometry expert, but even I know they're only allowed to intersect in one location, and I'll be darned if it's not here. Doesn't happen right here in Toledo. So that's a kind of infrastructure that I think you most commonly think about when you think about, the advantageous location and sort of, to use a real estate term, the bones of Toledo, and having just benefited from the American Rescue Plan, this influx of dollars, in our case it was $180 million, from the federal government post-COVID, that allowed us to make some real investments in our infrastructure. The first expenditure we made, the first $10 million of ARP money that we spent, was to once and for all eliminate all of the private lead service lines that exist in Toledo. You know, if you might remember what happened in Flint several years ago, that can't happen in Toledo anymore. It won't happen in Toledo because now the lead service lines are gone. We replaced them. And, we had a plan to do that over time, but it would have taken, I think, 32 or 33 years.
Wow.
The American Rescue Plan comes along and they've been moved and improved in 3 years. Hmm. So now So that's infrastructure in one sense. And in addition to that, there are, you know, countless upgrades to our park system that we made, and we've never fixed more roads in Toledo than we are now. You know, when I became mayor, we were resurfacing about 7 roads a year, not 7 lane miles, 7 roads, less than 3 lane miles a year. Now we're resurfacing 120 roads a year and about 50 lane miles. That's an infrastructure improvement. We're building a new YMCA over in the Warren Sherman neighborhood, part of the central city that needs that kind of investment. So yes, that kind of infrastructure is important, and we're doing it. But if you want to really pull back to the view from 30,000 feet, when I think of, in some ways, when I think of the structural advantages of this part of the country and a different way of looking at infrastructure, I'm going to point to the fact that we are located on top of 20% of all the fresh water on planet Earth.
Wow.
Call this region of the country what you want. Some people pejoratively call it the snow belt or the rust belt. I call it the water belt because at a time when the world is getting thirstier and thirstier, it's not a bad thing to have those Great Lakes in our backyard.
That's true.
1/5 of all the fresh water on the planet Earth are located in those Great Lakes. And by the end of this century, they believe that fresh water will have surpassed oil as the most valuable commodity on Earth. That's for two reasons. One, I think the world is weaning itself off fossil fuels. The United States will go kicking and screaming into that brave new world, I'm sure. But even we will get the memo that is what needs to happen. But the other force that is happening is just as real. And that is, you know, the world is thirsty here in this country. You know, you think of California, Arizona, Nevada, you know, parts of the West where there's wildfires and they're rationing water and all kinds of, to say nothing of sub-Saharan Africa, where they're desperate for a drop of water. We have the water in our backyard. You know, I think of my mom, who just, you know, she was born in 1950, and that is not to out mom's age. But
you just told it. So.
I understand. But the point is, it you know, that was a census year. 1950 was a census year right in the middle of the 20th century. When she was born, there were 2 billion people on planet Earth. Now that she is the age of 2024 minus 1950, you can figure it out on your own, there's 8 billion people on planet Earth. So
that's
in one lifetime, just one, just my mom's lifetime, the population of the Earth has quadrupled. What's it going to do in the next 74 years? What's it going to do in the 74 years after that? All of this is conspiring to make fresh water the most valuable infrastructure that a community can have, and no one has that the way this part of the country does.
Yes.
And I, you know, this part of the country has kind of taken, you know, some shots to the gut here over the last 70 years. And not just Toledo, it's Buffalo and Detroit and Cleveland and Milwaukee. You know, whether it was NAFTA, bad trade deals, globalization, whatever you want to call it, you know, investment and jobs have sort of, population has kind of shifted and moved away. And yet this region, about 100 years from now, because of the access to this fresh water, I truly believe it will, people will look at this part of the world that the way right now, it seems strange to say, but the way right now we look at, I don't know, Saudi Arabia. In other words, that place of in the world where the most valuable commodity resides. So I am bullish on this region and this city. You know, sure, in the short term, we're making positive steps in the right direction. You know, we are, you know, our crime stats are moving the right direction. We're winning awards for our economic development. I mean, there are good things happening in the short term, but I'm most excited about our long-term prospects just because of that infrastructure. So that might not have been the infrastructure you're referring to, but that's what I think.
No, we're talking about the same thing, long game. I think it's wise for us to think past ourselves. It's the responsibility, really, of any type of leadership, me being in the pastorate, you being at City Hall. We have to think past ourselves towards our future. If we're not, we're being very selfish. And there's a legacy, which this show is about, that's to be had. But we're kind of skipping over, I guess, the real reason why you're here. Tell us about Mr. Wade. Where are you from? Where'd you go to school?
Okay. Well, I was born in San Diego, California, but that's only because my dad was in the Navy.
Oh, okay.
So I was born, he was stationed there, and I was born on the Balboa, something called the Balboa Naval Hospital.
Oh, wow.
So, and like so many Southern California families, we moved to Toledo for the weather.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad that my one laugh line. I mean, essentially my dad was from Connecticut. My mom was from Toledo. So when mm-hmm. his time in the Navy ended, I imagine a vote of some kind was taken as to whether they were going to move back to where his family was from, Connecticut, or where her family was from, Toledo. And just like every tie vote in the history of marriage, the wife won. It's like in baseball, tie goes to the runner. Well, this tie. So anyhow, so I was born in San Diego, mm-hmm. but that's just because of, my dad being in the Navy. And we moved back to my mom's mm-hmm. town, Toledo, when I was still a baby, so I have no memories of that. And I've been essentially in Toledo ever since, with the exception of collegiate stays in Milwaukee, where I did my undergrad, and Ann Arbor, where I did my graduate school work. So I went to, we lived over near sort of Miracle Mile in uh-huh. that northwest part of Toledo. In fact, my folks still live in the same house I grew up in over on Capistrano.
Oh, wow.
I've been married for 54 years, and I'm sure right now they are, arguing over the remote control or whatever people who've been married for 54 years do. But they're doing it right there over in Capistrano. I went to Regina Chaley grade school, so I went the Catholic education route, mm-hmm. Sort of a classic, Polish Catholic family from, north part of Toledo.
Yeah.
Regina Chaley grade school, then St. Francis high school. And then I joked that was not yet enough Catholic guilt coursing through my veins. So then I decided, I got to go to college, a Catholic college. So I went up to Marquette University in Milwaukee, the Jesuit mm-hmm. school up in Milwaukee. I was fortunate enough to get a full ride, right? Full academic scholarship. So, didn't have to, was able to save mm-hmm. money that some of my friends are still paying back in college loans. But it was a great experience. Mm-hmm. At Marquette, and then after Marquette, I got a master's degree from the University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
I do tell people, though, despite that fact, I am among the world's biggest Ohio State football fans. So depending on what...
I don't have to put you out now.
Depending on what room I'm working, I can either truthfully emphasize that, University of Michigan, class of 96, and that's true, not lying. But then I can also speak with great passion
about
Ohio State. So that's my educational journey. But essentially, with the exception of sort of living in the dorm in Milwaukee or living, I'm about as Toledo as you can get. My mom was a preschool teacher, taught little 3 and 4 year olds at a school over a different part of West Toledo called Fair Green Preschool.
Mm-hmm.
She also taught that on weekends would teach art at the museum. So she's very artistic, right brain, creative mm-hmm. Sort of person. My dad was a Toledo police officer and has a very mathematical, analytical left brain type of guy. Mm-hmm. And so I think in some ways I'm a mix of the two of them, like most kids are of their parents. So, just a classic, middle class Toledo, dad's a cop, mom's a teacher. Catholic school.
So you think your passion for service was inherited?
Well, I do. I think it was inherited in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Again, dad's a cop, mom's mm-hmm. a teacher. There's part of that. A ton of teachers in my family. My dad is one of six kids, and I want to say four of his siblings are teachers. And actually, mm-hmm. though he ended up not using it, his degree is in teaching. I actually remember probably would have gotten in trouble for this, but I think the statute of limitations has expired. I mean, he always worked midnights.
Mm-hmm.
So his whole career worked midnights. And I remember in high school, him leaving for work, getting his squad car, and then coming back to our house and then helping me with my calculus for, 45 minutes. So there's that part of service.
Mm-hmm.
obviously something of a military family. I mentioned being born on a naval base, so you know, he's, you know, a lot of being from Connecticut and not far from a little town called Groton, where they have a big naval base. They're all in the Navy, so sure, there's a service part there,
but family
and family. But if you actually to tell the story of, I suppose, how I decided to serve the way I did, because there's a lot of different ways to serve the community, you'd have to think back to my time at Marquette, where I was influenced by a Catholic priest. And it's an interesting story. You know, I when I went to Marquette, I wanted to be a journalist. I thought I'd be writing for the New York Times Today or, you know, some sort of, you know, I was
a
journalism major, you know, the who, what, when, where, why, how, the inverted pyramid style. But I had to take an intro to poli-sci course just to satisfy my, as a core part of the, you know, journalism degree. At St. Francis, I had never taken political science to the extent the word science was in the course title. I was sure I wasn't going to enjoy it since if the word science was in the course title. But the professor, and this would not be too unusual in a school like Marquette, was a priest named Father Tim O'Brien. And he was just a charismatic guy, still is. He's, you know, he's probably 80 or so now. But I still keep in touch. And he probably, next to my parents, is probably the number one influence in my life. And he would talk about, you know, changing the world and making a difference. And, you know, first of all, he made the subject matter interesting. Very colorful guy, not the standard, and not the kind of priest I was familiar with.
He wasn't boring.
No, and he was, you know, he smoked a cigar, and he kind of, his language, you know, sometimes he would use salty language. I mean, he was just an interesting guy. But at his core, and I didn't maybe realize it at the time, you know, when I was a 17-year-old freshman, you know, sitting in the front row of his class. But now that I'm older, I think back. Okay, Father Tim O'Brien, you know, so when would he have been born? You know, he was probably born in the early 40s is my guess. He would have come of age at a time, you know, if you know the history of the Catholic Church during Vatican II, you know, which is a time of, you know, sort of openness and, you know, whatever. But he's also Irish and proudly Irish. You know, so think about, you know, in his formative years, the Kennedys were on the ascent and the Peace Corps. And I know it's quaint and no one, trust me, no one these days thinks of public life as a noble calling. I get it. You know, I think politicians test somewhere around Ebola. But there was a time, and he was influenced by it, when it really was a noble calling, you know, and, you know, folks like him were locking arms with Martin Luther King and, you know, marching and bringing about social justice. So anyhow, he was always talking about changing the world and, you know, feeding the hungry and housing the homeless and all that stuff. And you know, when you're a wide-eyed freshman, you know, from Toledo, I soaked it up and, you know, began developing different interests, picked up a double major and, you know, academically started moving in a different direction. But he always talked about trying to get, you know, involved in public life. He goes, you know, there's people in this world who make decisions that affect millions of people and distribute millions of dollars. And do you know what we call these people? We call them mayor. We call them councilman. We call them state senator. We call them congressman. You know, wouldn't it be something if those people were motivated for the right reasons? Now, goodness knows, 30-some years later, not everyone I've met in this vocation is similarly motivated. But I have told myself that if I ever stopped believing that this was a way to make a real difference for people, then I would, you know, go do something else. But
you haven't done that yet.
No, because you can make a difference if you're motivated in the right. So he's a big influence in my life, and I stay in touch with him. When I got married, we, you know, flew him into town, and he married my wife and I, and you know, he's an important influence. So I think that, yes, a sense of service, but it comes from a couple different places. Family, sure, but an awful lot from Father O'Brien. So I joke that whenever I screw something up, there's a Catholic priest from Milwaukee, Wisconsin to blame. You can blame Father O'Brien. It's all his fault, or else I'd be, you know, I don't know, who knows, writing for the Blade today. So.
Oh, wow. So all these things led you into service. What was your first foray into attempting politics?
Well, it again, because of Father O'Brien's influence, I wanted to get involved. I wanted to run for office as soon as I could, you know, and so.
Directly out of college.
While still in
college.
Right. So, in fact, and I'm not saying this is the smartest decision anyone's ever made, but I so badly had the fire in my belly to serve that after my undergrad, I was starting to, you know, I was applying to different law schools and grad schools and whatnot. And I was fortunate, you know, I worked hard and got good grades. So I got into all of them. I got into Harvard, actually.
Oh, really?
And I might be the only person in the history of the world to get accepted and say, nope. Thanks. because at that, and again, looking back, it doesn't seem like the smartest decision. But I said, well, wait a second. You know, Boston is 17 hours away from Toledo. Mm-hmm. Ann Arbor is 45 minutes away from Toledo. Mm-hmm. So I would have to forestall, you know, getting involved politically if I went to Boston. I'd have to delay a full 2-3 years, however long it took. I can't do that. I have to get involved. So and again, maybe Harvard's number one, mm-hmm. Michigan's number three. It's not like I admit it. There was a huge drop in the rankings. But I very much decided to go, you know, for my post-grad work at Michigan because it was so close to Toledo and I'd be able to get involved mm-hmm. While a student. So mm-hmm. while getting my master's at Michigan, mm-hmm. I ran for and was elected to the school board. And that was, 1995, so I had just turned 23. So it was, you know, but again, that's Father O'Brien. It's like, you got to get involved, you got to do it now, and boom, 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 go, go, go.
I couldn't imagine you with a Boston accent going to Harvard.
Well, my dad still has one, because again, that whole side of the family's from New England and kind of a little town over near the Rhode Island border. So he has a, in fact, I'm told, I don't remember this, but I'm told when I was very young, you mm-hmm. know, like preschool, kindergarten, that the speech therapist at school, you know, spending time with me and mm-hmm. couldn't figure out what was wrong with me and I wasn't pronouncing certain words right. And so they brought my parents in, kind of had the parent-teacher session. And I think my mom was doing most of the mm-hmm. talking at that time. But then my dad said a few things and the therapist said, wait a second, say that again. You know, and he was, there weren't many R's being pronounced. Mm-hmm. And so she said, okay, all right, never mind.
I get it.
Stop, okay, this will go away. You know, so I guess I must have had a little New England accent.
A little speech impediment from dad.
Yeah, my dad, to this day, the man's name, Bob, as in Robert, sounds exactly the same as the woman's name, Barb, as in Barbara. So for my dad,
it's my mom's name.
When my dad pronounced it, they both sound Bob. Whether, you know, Bob as in Robert and Bob as in Barbara.
That's funny.
Anyhow, so, but that's why I went to Ann Arbor because it was close to Toledo. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, I was able to, I mean, I had an apartment up there both of my years, but I, you know, burned a rut into 23 going.
So did you win?
Oh, yes. No, I won. I don't know what this says about me, but I've always been fortunate enough I've put my name before the voters 10 times mm-hmm. In my, like, starting in 1995 with the school board and mm-hmm. most recently in 2021 and running for re-election as mayor.
95, who were you working under at the school board?
It was the county school board. Mm-hmm. So it was a man named Tom Baker. Mm-hmm. Tom Baker and Sandy Frisch was his, you know, top deputy. And then, of course, she took over after he retired.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
But anyhow, so starting in 1995 and then re-election as mayor in 21, mm-hmm. I've been fortunate enough to always come out on top. I'm 10 for 10.
Wow.
So I don't want to tempt fate because at some point I'll be 10 for 11 maybe. But that's I'm proud of that. I'm proud that I've always been able to you know, make my case to the voters, and I've never lost.
Gotcha.
So there's a first time for everything. I'm hoping not to experience that, but I've been fortunate over the years. But yes, I won that year.
Any other vocations?
I, at different times, have, you know, kind of have that. I'm not a licensed social worker. I mean, I told you my educational journey, but I think I probably have the heart of a social worker mm-hmm. and call me what you want, sort of a, you know, bleeding heart, do-gooder sort of personality. So while I was on city council, I worked at a drug and alcohol recovery agency that doesn't exist anymore, but folks with a little sense of history might remember a place called Compass.
Yes.
Compass, I worked in the headquartered right by the Collingwood Arts Center, right across from Scott High School at the old Merrymans College. That was my office over there. It ended up getting sort of, I don't want to say bought out, but merged with Zeph Center. And so, anyhow, so I've worked at, you know, in that case, trying to, you know, get folks off of drug and alcohol addiction. I worked at a think tank, actually, when I was on city council. Also, something called the New Ohio Institute kind of studied statewide education policy to come up with better way to fund public education. That was when the DeRolf decision was being handed down. The DeRolf decision, of course, declaring that the way Ohio funds public education is unconstitutional because of our over-reliance on the property tax. And four times the Supreme Court has said that, and the legislature still hasn't. We're still, you know, so I kind of thought that the work I was doing 25 years ago would have been, well, it's just as relevant as ever. So, you know, so worked at the New Ohio Institute think tank, worked at Compass. But then when I was elected county treasurer in 2004, that really was that's a full-time position where city council and school board, as you know, is kind of a quasi, you know, it's important, but it's not necessarily full-time. So, but being county treasurer was. And so when I was elected county treasurer, that that took my full-time focus. And then obviously as mayor, that's there are no days off. Many is the time I find myself, you know, sitting at church or shopping at Kroger, and I'm reminded that there's a pothole that needs to be filled or things. So anyhow, so that's
hopefully in a nice way.
In a very polite way. So those are the other things I've sort of done as an adult. But I do wistfully look back on my first job ever in this world was being a caddy at Inverness when I was 14.
Yeah.
And, you know, life coming full circle. My son has done that the last couple summers. So.
Oh, awesome.
I still have never golfed there. I don't think my game is good enough. And there's awesome.
Oh, no, my dad sucked and he went there.
Well, I'm always... I don't know. I suppose I'm more comfortable as someone who assists the rich people who golf at country clubs than being, you know, at the end of the day, I'm the son of the cop and the son of the teacher, you know, grew up, you know, with barbed wire on the fence in our backyard still, which is actually still there.
Seriously?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't to keep us in or, you know, but it was kind of a light industrial business right behind where we lived. It was different things over the years. Most recently, P&J Industries over kind of Lasky and Lewis. Anyhow, that backed up to the back.
See, my imagination was like chickens in the backyard.
No. It wasn't that. It was because, and actually what it, what that really meant was that, you know, growing up, whenever the Nerf ball would go over the back fence or the wiffle ball, you couldn't jump over the fence.
Yeah.
And going around, you know, it would be a 20-minute, you know, walk all the way out to Lewis and back and maybe take your bike. So we got pretty good at, and it would take a couple of us kids, pulling the bottom of the fence up.
Oh, yeah, slide under. Can't screw that up.
Well, and I wouldn't be doing that at my current size. I mean, you'd have to sneak in there.
And you're much thinner now.
Not thin enough to
not for that.
pull that move off. So anyhow, that's what I mean. But anyhow, my point is very, you know, it's a very middle class, working class. And I don't know, I was not raised in a family that golfed at Inverness, I guess, is my point. I totally get it, but I'm a caddy for the people who golf at Inverness.
Metaphorically. And
that's right. Not someone who golfs at Inverness. So.
Understood. Well, that's awesome. It's exactly what we were looking for today, to hear about who you are. Because I think a lot of times people will have a caricature perception of people that are in public service. Even myself, I'm in ministry. I've been doing it for 20 years. Been in the pastorate for 10 years. And people put you up on this pedestal, love you, hate you. And they really don't know who you are. And I think it's important, as you did today, to really express who you are, where you come from, and why you do what you do.
Yeah.
And I think you've done that well today.
Well, I've enjoyed the opportunity, but not because I have any zest for talking about myself.
Most people don't.
But to the extent it helps me talk about Toledo, that's
yes.
And how it put me in a position to help Toledo. I enjoy that part. There's nothing quite like serving your town, your hometown.
It is.
And
it's awesome.
I've been here my whole life. This is I love Toledo. Mm-hmm. Toledo has, and finally, I think finally, people around the country are starting to see Toledo for what it is and for mm-hmm. the potential it has. It is a wonderful mid-sized Midwestern town with all of the Midwestern nice, you know, that maybe you don't get on the coast, but with the cost of living that you also don't get on the coast. I mean, it's, you know, 1/8 the cost of what it would live in Chicago and I think 1/10 of what it would cost to live in LA and 1/12 of New York. And you can enjoy some world-class amenities mm-hmm. for a reasonable cost of living.
Back to the crossroads, we're not far from all those places you just mentioned.
That's exactly right. We have one of the best zoos in the country, if not the best zoo in the country. We have we probably have a top 10 museum. And when I say top 10, I'm stacking that up against anything you'd see in New York and Chicago and whatnot. Our park system is number one in the country, just won that distinction. We don't have the Yankees. We got the Mud Hens, and we love... So we have all those things.
The Mud Hens are still world-renowned, thank God, for Mr. Pacos himself.
Yeah, no, and Jamie Farr, I think, helped.
But
to your point, though, you can enjoy all that. But if you really, you know, if you feel the need for, you know, something really big, mm-hmm. well, then you're an hour from Detroit and 2 hours from Cleveland, 2.5 hours from Columbus, 4 hours from Chicago.
Just got to work on that airport. I used to fly out of Toledo, and it was very, very convenient.
It was. There's,
now I have to go to Detroit with a driver.
Yeah. There's a lot going on there in terms of, I mean, when you get into the way the airlines were deregulated, you know, that had something to do with it. But nonetheless, I enjoyed being here today because it gave me the chance to talk about Toledo.
Yes.
And there's some good things going on, and I'm proud to be a part of them.
Absolutely. Well, we thank you for joining us today for the Voices of Legacy. I didn't really hit the last question. I'm going to hit you with one more. What do you think your legacy is? And you kind of hit on some of it. And what would you like for it to be?
I think my legacy might be that I was mayor at a time when Toledo, you know, maybe turned the corner and started making some progress, you know, mayor at a time when the rest of the world did start noticing, you know, that Toledo is a pretty darn good place to live. I mean, it seemed like when I was a kid growing up here, you know, not that you can always put a lot of faith in these rankings, but I hated the rankings that would come out every once in a while. Like, oh, geez, you know, what are we now? You know, last in prevention of scurvy or, you know, you know, just some, you know, now what? But now you look at these rankings, all of a sudden, okay, number one most affordable city to live in, or number two for, you know, to raise a family or whatever it is. Realtor.com said that Toledo is the hottest housing market in the United States of America in 2024. Site Selection Magazine has us ranked in the, you know, top 10 for 7 years in a row for new business investment. So I think if there's a legacy, I'd like it to be you know, being mayor during this transitional time when people started seeing Toledo for the potential it has and, you know, making some of the tougher long-term decisions to get us ready for that future growth, the regional water system that we created in my first year as mayor, or finally fixing these roads after, you know, years of neglect, the work that's happening on the Maumee River and the riverfront to sort of reimagine that our skyline with the Glass City Metro Park and things of that. And in terms of what they might say about me, all I want them to say is that he tried his best, because that is what I say. People come up to me, you know, a lot and say, hey, you know, you're doing a good job or doing this. And I say to him sincerely, I say, I'm trying my best. That is, no matter what, whether good or bad, I have worked my rear end off. I have done the best I can do for the city I love, and I just, that would be a nice epitaph for folks to say when I tried my best and sincerely worked my hardest to make Toledo a great place.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Honorable Mayor Katzkavich, for Katzkavich. I want to get it right one day. Joining.
The Katzkavich part is correct. I'm not sure about the honorable part.
You're here.
Okay.
You're our mayor. But we thank you for being in the building today and sharing your life with us and our listeners on the Voices of Legacy here on WGTE. Remember that you're writing your own legacy every day that you live. Be kind to someone today. Thank you for listening to the Voices of Legacy. This is your friend, Pastor Carl Mitchell III, your host of this program. We want you to go to wgte.org/legacy to like, share, subscribe, and hear all of our past podcasts and our future podcasts. Be a friend and join with us in the Voices of Legacy, where you're writing your own legacy every day that you live. Have a blessed day.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.